the best celeb interviewer in Britain, comedian, blogger, author. This podcast, Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast, over 1 million downloads every week. It's closing in on 500 episodes. Grab your tickets for his new stand-up show, which is called Can I Have My Ball Back? At richardherring.com. Good morning, Richard. How you doing, fella?
I'm very good, Patrick. How are you?
I'm good. I was just looking at this. This is the first stand-up show in 6 years. Normally, Richard, what comedians do, they labour through a stand-up tour. They think, I can't do this anymore. They come up with a podcast. They tour the podcast. That makes a truckload of money, so they don't have to go through the pain of touring. What are you doing? You've done it in reverse.
Well, I've missed doing stand-up a little bit. It's partly because of lockdown and everything as well, obviously, that it's so long. But and I've got young kids, it's been nice to be at home a bit more. But it's 6 years since I did my last stand-up show, and I kind of fancied seeing how it was to get back on, doing stand-up, which is a bit different than the podcast. The podcast is lots of fun and is all improvised. But it's nice to sort of get back to doing some jokes and something happened to me that I, as a comedian, when something terrible happens to you, in this case, I had testicular cancer, which for most people would be pretty much a downer. It was a little bit of a downer, but also as a comedian, I thought, I think there's a good show in this. Lots of funny things happen. It's a very funny show, although there's some moments that aren't quite so funny, obviously. But I thought, this has fallen in my lap, Patrick, literally. So I've got to kind of get out there and tell the story.
Literally. I had Ed Byrne on the Late Late Show last night, and he's got a new show, Tragedy Plus Time. And it's that thing, isn't it, where if you're a comedian and good stuff happens, you think, I need to talk about it. If bad stuff happens, you go, ooh, there's a show in here that will also be laughs and potentially pathos.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not, and also... I'd sort of dealt with this area so much in my comedy, but I did a male version of the Vagina Monologues 20 years ago. I've been doing lots of things about masculinity. I'd done this thing on International Women's Day where I told men when International Men's Day was, when they thought there wasn't one, which was would have been yesterday if I'd done it, but I stopped doing it. Yep. But so, it sort of felt like if you had to choose someone for this to happen to in order to get people talking about it and get it out there, I couldn't be a better person. I'm not very happy with fate for giving me cancer, but it's a positive thing to talk about it. And I found when I let people know it had happened, I got so many people telling me their experience that, I think it's really helpful, as well as hopefully funny and entertaining, to talk about this openly,
So first of all, are you okay?
Yeah, I think so. It's 3 years since I had the operation, and they see you every 6 months and you get checked up every 6 months. So I'm cancer free. Luckily, with testicular cancer, it's something that's basically outside your body. This is the only time that testicles being outside your body is a good thing. As a man, we know that that's it can be quite a challenge at times. But, basically, as long as it doesn't spread, as long as you catch it early, keep checking yourself. And this is men and women, check every vulnerable area. If you notice anything different, just go to your GP and it'll probably be nothing, but it's worth checking out. But so luckily it had basically taken over the entire thing. What was inside my testicle was bigger than my testicle. It was like my testicle was a TARDIS. It might have been shooting things backwards and forwards in time. I might be my own grandfather. That's my only worry.
David Tennant hiding inside.
And they whipped it out, and everything's okay, I think.
Good news. I love also, whenever you got the news, where your brain goes to, potentially, how your wife is going to survive without you.
On her own to begin with.
Yeah.
She's a very attractive woman. It won't be long before someone's taking my place. But that was, the minute when it really hit home that it was happening, my kids were, we were playing with the kids. We were all at home in lockdown. We were all laughing. It was like in a film just before something terrible happens. I got the call, and it was, that was a very emotional moment because my son was two at the time. And I was just thinking, I was thinking about my kids and my family, and then very quickly just thinking about myself and thinking, I've put all this work in with these kids, all the bottoms I've wiped and the puke in the face and worse, and they're not even going to remember who I was.
And then you did this thing where you were trying to create memories with your snowman making skills. That was something that probably needs improvement.
Yeah, well, you know, it was really thinking, I was trying to look for a moment that at least my daughter would remember me, and it snowed all about 2 days after this. So I thought, I'll make a snowman, this would be great. But I hadn't cleared all the cat poo off the lawn, so we were rolling this snowman around, and it was sort of picking up the cat poo, and I was quite pleased, because I thought, oh, this is good, you know, we can put the snowman on the border, and we'll get rid of all the cat poo. But so I was sort of gleefully rolling around this, you know, poo-filled, horrible snowman. My daughter made another snowman that fell apart, so she was crying, looking at this man gleefully making this awful scatological snowman. And I thought, oh, God, I hope this is... Now I think about it, I hope this isn't the memory she has about me. So, yeah, look, I mean, it was, you know, it's a weird thing to... But everything's heightened, emotions are heightened when you go through something like this. And so your comedic observation skills really come back into play, you know, and you really notice stuff. And so... You know, it's very easy, as you know, once you've settled down, you've got a family, it's very easy to kind of, you stop spotting the funny stuff. So for everything to be focused, you just notice the funny stuff everywhere. You know, there was a dent in the CT machine that I went into when I was getting my whole body scanned, and you're kind of thinking, why is there a dent in this machine? You know, so you start imagining what scenarios had happened to the last guy in there and what might happen to you in this sort of... It was made by Siemens as well, the CT machine. And I don't think... I want a CT machine made by someone who doesn't make microwaves and dishwashers and didn't choose the brand of appliance based on the same reason I chose to buy Siemens for my stuff.
There are so many places that we could go with that one, but we're going to take a right turn. So far, I believe two gents have fainted during the show. Is that from hysterical laughter or gratuitous moments that are flashing through their heads?
I describe in a little bit of detail how the removal goes about. I mean, and I think that's it. With my other genital based show, I did have one guy who fainted as well. So I think sometimes, you know, men are very sensitive about this area, and sometimes it just gets to them. But yeah, it was, I was, you know, I talk about the operation, but I was asked if I wanted a general or a local anaesthetic for this. And I can't imagine anyone takes the local on this particular operation, because I didn't really want to be there to witness this. I would have fainted if I had been, but I was knocked out. So if you're of a sensitive disposition, I'll give you some trigger warnings, guys, and you can go and have a drink while this bit's being said. But yeah,
that is the question that we all wanted on Play Your Cards Right with Brucey. How many men said yes, they would take the local? How many people takes the local anaesthetic for that?
I can't imagine it, but I guess some people, you know, if you have a scientific bent, if you want to see yourself semi-emasculated, then, you know, that's the thing for you.
That's the way to go. Lots of texts coming in for you, Richard. Keep them coming, folks. 85058. We're going to try to get through as many of these as we can after this. 5 Live Lounge. Richard Herring is still here. Russell on the text wants to know, when can we expect a book from Rufus Harringer?
Oh, wow. You've got some very good research, everyone who's doing this. I did think of having a pen name if I was going to write something a bit more serious. And Rufus means red. And Haringer, I think, I found out what the Spanish for herring was. So I was going to have a pen name of Rufus Haringer or something like that, in the hope that people would take me seriously as a novelist or a playwright. But yeah, I don't think I've let the cat out of the bag now, so I'll have to think of a different name.
Dope. We're talking about writing there. You, are you still writing a blog every day? I mean, when did you start this?
In November 25th, 2002, I think, was the first one. Whoa. So I've done it every single day. It was just a way to, it's called warming up, because I just thought, I was sort of in a bit of writer's block and was trying to, I thought if I write something every day about the previous day, then that'll set me off and I'll be writing all day long. But of course, I just wrote one blog entry and then went, oh, that's fine, I'll take the rest of the day off. But it's been it's been an amazing resource for stand-up, for newspaper columns and stuff. You really have to struggle sometimes to think of something to write about. And then there was a time when I really couldn't think of anything. Then I remembered I'd just been in the supermarket the day before and I'd bought 9 yogurts. And the cashier said, oh, someone likes yoghurt. And then I wrote a blog defending myself against this accusation that I liked yoghurt in an unnatural way. And that became like an entire stand-up show. So I would never have thought of even, you know, writing anything about that, but because you were looking for something from that day. So it's been a really good writing exercise. I recommend it to anyone who wants to be a writer. You don't have to put it online, but I've got that kind of obsessive nature that once I've started something, once you've done it for 22 years, it's very hard to go, I think I'll take a day off now. It's, you know, so I've got, even when, and like when I've got kids, pretty much nothing happens to you when you're married with kids and live in the countryside. No, so it can be quite tricky.
This is what I was thinking. I mean, is there a blog or are you faking them like the moon landings just to get into the attic for like, what age are the kids?
My kids are now 9 and 6.
Oh,
so they're at school now in the daytime. So I don't need to have an excuse to go into the attic to work. But it's a lot. My memory is so bad now as well, as I get older, that I can just look back 10 years and see stories that I've totally forgotten about. So it's a lovely, I don't even really think of anyone reading it anymore. It's just a nice resource for me. But obviously you can go and trawl through 22 years of my life if you really want to.
I remember watching the documentary on Jerry Seinfeld, and he just had all of his bits, all of these bits of paper just out there. And yeah. So that idea of just being able to go, this is it, this is the blog, this is the thought process, do you not feel slightly smug with yourself? I mean, that there's a good sense of achievement.
I mean, it is sort of amazing when I stop and think about it. I remember getting to the end of doing a whole year and thinking, oh, someone, you know, I've done a whole year of blogging. Someone's going to write a newspaper article about this amazing thing I've done. But it sort of just goes under the radar. I like a lot of my work, which I'm actually, the older I get, the happier I am about. So yeah, it doesn't, in a way, it doesn't quite process, but yeah, that it's the, what I've done. But Samuel Pepys only did 9 years of diary writing, and he did okay. So I don't know if in 400 years' time people will be ploughing through my slightly barbed comments about Stuart Lee and wondering who he was. Who knows? We'll find out.
You're still waiting for the Guardian culture section to do that limited productivity special. So
yes.
We've got to talk about the podcast. I mean, this is a huge, huge thing. I know you asked me to do it in Dublin, and I couldn't do it in Dublin because I wasn't in Dublin that night, and I was so sad about it. It's just a phenomenon.
Yeah, and the Dublin gig was absolutely amazing. There was 900 people, the 3 Olympia, and it was a terrific night. So it's a shame, but we'll get you another time back to it. But yeah, again, it's something that, well, most of these things I've sort of fallen into by accident. I kind of wanted a podcast just because of the autonomy and the freedom, you know, the freedom to do exactly what you wanted. And I just loved the immediacy of it. And all my friends were going, all the comedians were going, why are you doing that for free? You're an idiot. And it's like, I just like being in control of stuff. And I fell into doing this interview podcast 12 years ago, after having podcasted for 4 years before that. I was just, again, I was amazed at the people who would come on, and we just get fantastic guests. But I think because it's a long form interview, and this is not, you know, me, you and me are talking for half an hour, but that's quite unusual on the radio. You know, you usually get 5 minutes to push something through. And so to talk to someone for an hour or 90 minutes, you end up getting really good stories. And I sort of realized quickly that it's good to talk to people about the stuff they don't usually get asked about. So I usually talk about as well as mentioning their successful stuff, we'll talk about the things that weren't so successful, which I think is interesting. But you end up getting much better stories from the failures than you do from the successes. So it's quite interesting.
492 episodes. Anything planned for the big 500, or it's just another day? Are you going to give me the football club? We only look one podcast ahead. We don't.
Yeah, I don't. You know, I don't really keep an eye on the numbers anymore. So it's we probably have recorded the 501. Already, and I don't know even which one it is. So there isn't a big one. We've still got a few more of the tour dates to go, and we're doing, like, it's sold out now in Hull. Bob Mortimer's going to come up to do one that won't be broadcast, because he's done one that has been broadcast, and he wants the freedom to do one that's so I guess that will be the celebration.
But that's the one,
because I've done Edinburgh and book ones. It's probably about 750 or something by now anyway, so it's, you know, the numbers don't really add up to how many we've done.
You're in the work in progress stage for the Can I Have My Ball Back?
Yeah.
What stage are we at on the work in progress? There's always that terrifying thing. If you're in a band, the songs are written, the album is out, let's tour this album. For a comedian, it's Let's do a poster. Let's give a title. Let's sell the tickets. Let's write the show.
Yeah, it is. It's usually very much that because I've written the book of this show for, you know, I wrote the book first.
Yep.
So I do have like a lot of material that I could draw upon. But it is because it's a story as well. It's a little bit easier, I think. I did a few last year. I was just doing them every now and again to see, you know, if people would laugh at a show about obviously quite a serious subject. It's in pretty good shape, but I think the second half needs a little bit of work. I've got a puppet. I've been doing a lot of ventriloquism during lockdown, and I have a puppet based on the expunged part of my body.
Yes,
that bit needs the puppet won't rehearse with me. He doesn't like me. Obviously, that's why he tried to kill me. I won't say what his name is.
The talking tea.
He's called Wright something.
Yes.
So that bit's kind of quite improvised at the moment. So I'll be interested to see where that goes. But that depends very much on the puppet and what it feels like saying.
Before I let you go, I grew up near the Mourne Mountains. The Mourne Mountains are full of stone walls, land that has to be cleared. It's in my blood. I know you're a fan. How many meters of stone wall have you built?
Well, it's hard to measure because I'm trying to clear about a billion stones off a field that is quite a few acres.
Yeah.
And I'm just sort of chucking them into the side mainly. I've made a few quite nice cairns. It's very disappointing. I've been doing it for 6 years. And when you come to look at the field, you would not be able to tell anything had happened, I think, unfortunately. So it's quite a disappointing. It's a kind of Ozymandias style. Style triumph of me trying to create something visible from space that I think sadly will not ever be.
It's a piece of performance art, Richard. That's what it is. That's what it is. Can I Have My Ball Back? It's coming to a theatre near you very, very soon. Tickets at richardherring.com. Richard, thank you so, so much for coming on.
My pleasure.
Still to come, Shaznay Lewis.
It was Elias. It was 3-0.